Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey Fleck here along with Shad Marquitz. We are your hosts for this weekend show. Another fairly volatile week for stocks, markets broadly, as well as the metals, but maybe a little less volatile than the week before. The metals started off on the wrong foot to kick off this week, but stabilized a little bit towards the end of the week. All eyes, again, being on the Fed meeting next week and just how many basis points the Fed will hike rates. We're going to cover a lot of the market moves as well as some predictions looking ahead to Fed policy, not just to next meeting, but throughout the rest of this year, throughout this weekend show. We're kicking off this weekend show with Adrian Day, president of Adrian Day Asset Management, also manages the Euro Pacific Gold Fund. Adrian, before recording, we were chatting about the markets broadly, and I simply asked you, what's catching your eye? What are you paying most attention to? And you pointed to some of the macro factors. There's a number of different macro factors that we can touch on, but start us off, Adrian, with what you think is the most important macro factor, big picture, to focus on for investors.
Yeah, okay. Well, thank you. And thank you for having me, Corey. Hello, Shad. And I think the biggest macro factor is the Federal Reserve, what the Federal Reserve is doing relative to other central banks around the world and relative to the realities in the United States. That's a big topic, and there's a lot of dimensions to it. But to me, that is the biggest thing. I mean, the Fed is talking about raising rates and reducing the balance sheet and acting as though inflation, they're going to defeat inflation, which they don't think is that strong anyway. You know, the Federal Reserve members publish a thing called the dot plot, where they all make their predictions for where the inflation and where inflation and GDP and so on are going to be next year and the year after and so on. And inflation, they're looking for less than 3% inflation next year. That could be, but it certainly is that's a fairly aggressive assumption that inflation is going to get to under 3% next year and back down to 2%, which not coincidentally happens to be their target longer run. I don't see that happening, frankly, certainly not over the next 12 months. Just because inflation is already fairly, as we've discussed, it's fairly well ingrained in the U.S. at the moment and in other countries around the world. It's not just the U.S. by any means. And the Fed, their actions, or at least I should say what they're promising, is by no means, everybody's talking about the hawkish Fed, but what the Fed is promising is by no means hawkish given the environment. And that's important. If you look at what the Fed is talking about raising interest rates, a year from now, at the end of the next year, end of the next 12 months, real interest rates would still be deeply negative, more deeply negative than in the middle of the 1970s at the onset of a great inflation, if the Fed does its most aggressive plan for raising interest rates. And that's the key. You know, everybody thinks the Fed's going to back away, quickly and surrender and turn course. But you look at some of these previous examples when the Fed did that, and inflation was, the published inflation numbers were far lower than they are now. So we've got inflation at, 8.5%. You need interest rates to go much higher than 3.5%, which is what the Fed's bold action would call for. Same with the balance sheet. You know, reducing the balance sheet by $95 billion a month over the next 12 months would still leave us with a balance sheet of almost $8 trillion, which is more than twice what it was 2 years ago. So what I'm saying is that given where we are today in terms of the starting point for interest rates, where inflation is today, the Fed's actions are simply not fit for purpose. And they just sound hawkish in comparison with 2000 and 2007 and 2015 and so on. But the conditions are so much worse today.
Well, Adrian, I think you bring up some good points there, because the Fed has never been this far behind the curve. And so even though they're talking tough and they're talking what some people consider hawkish, to your point, and we joked about this a couple months ago, even if they did 100 basis point hikes a couple times in a row, we'd still have negative real rates and things would still be deeply negative. And so they're starting from so far behind the curve that even if they do what they plan on doing, it's not going to really do much to tame inflation. I guess my question is, if they are maybe hoping that some of these supply chain issues get worked out, that the war in Ukraine resolves itself, but basically they're hoping that the year-over-year comparables on inflation start trending lower, and so the rate of change in inflation starts heading down, and then they can say, oh, we can take a victory lap. But wouldn't prices still be really high for the consumer, really high for business, and couldn't that still put the brakes on the economy?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, first of all, for the Biden administration here in the U.S. and others to sort of point the finger at Putin and point the finger at China's COVID lockdowns, of course those things are not helping. But before Russia invaded Ukraine, inflation was already a problem. And, you know, I have no doubt that in 6 months' time, when, as we discussed before the show started, you know, the year-on-year comparables, the base effect will kick in with a higher base instead of a lower base. And obviously, it's much more difficult to get an 8% inflation, an 8% increase in prices when you're starting at a much higher level. But prices are not going backwards. They're not going back, I don't think. They're not going back to where they were before the war started. So I think to look at these other factors, these are, gosh, I was going to say icing on the cake. That's kind of not a very good metaphor to use when we're talking about negative effects like wars and shutdowns. But these things are simply incremental to the core reasons why prices are going up. And the core reasons that prices are going up, of course, is because money's being created excessively for 10 years, but particularly for the last 2 years. In the lockdown, we had $1 trillion worth of loans to small business. We had, what, $800 billion worth of checks handed out to people. Well, et cetera, et cetera. A lot of people refinanced because took advantage to refinance because of the Fed's policies pushing rates down. And so when they refinanced, a lot of people refinanced precisely to take money out. And so all of this free money and easy money, you know, is money that consumers spend by and large. And we're seeing that now. You know, I mean, on the last week's earnings calls from companies, all sorts of companies across the board, they're all talking about, you know, the consumer is spending. Well, of course the consumer's spending because they were given so much free money. So but that can only delay, you know, I've been asked, could the government sort of have another round of stimulus to sort of stave off a recession or a decline in the economy? Well, of course they could, but the more you do and the longer it goes on, the bigger the fundamental problems are building up. And you can't have a strong economy based on printing money and giving it away. And that should be obvious to everybody.
That is fair, Adrian, but can you have a strong market? Because quite frankly, we heard for the last decade that the economy was diverging from the markets because the markets kept doing pretty well as the economy was stuck in slow growth. And also to your point, yes, I guess historically the Fed is, well, interest rates are really low, but remember, we're probably going to get a 50 basis point hike coming, and it's been 22 years since we last got one of those. But to this point, it all seems so gloom and doom, right? Everybody's pointing to a recession. Everybody's pointing to the fact that the Fed just can't even hike rates for maybe one or two more meetings What if they can, though? What if everybody, all these gloom and doom, have gotten a little ahead of their skis, and quite frankly, we could be in for a year of slow and gradual hikes out of the Fed?
I'm not one that thinks that the Fed's going to reverse very quickly. I think the Fed is going to stay their course, and I don't think their course is hawkish, but they're going to stay with their course somewhat longer than a lot of people are thinking. And there's two main reasons for that. One is they're starting from a much worse position with interest rates so much lower than in 2000, you know, the last time they tried to hike. They're starting with rates much lower to begin with, and they're actually fighting inflation, which they weren't doing in 2013 or 15 or even back to 2007. They weren't really fighting inflation. And now inflation is a real thing, but they have to raise rates to fight inflation. So I think for that reason, as well as their credibility, the fact that they have repeated so many times what they're going to do, I think the Fed will stay the course somewhat longer than a lot of people are thinking. But that only increases the risk. I hate to say this, but this only increases the risk of recession, in my view. I mean, you know, when rates move up, balance sheets are, particularly corporate balance sheets, are quite strong right now. But if companies have borrowed a lot of money, when you had easy money, right, it encourages borrowing. And you had a lot of companies borrow money. And that money is not just sitting there in a bank account. Obviously, they did things with it. One of the things they did with it was buy back stock. A lot of companies borrowed money just to buy back stock. But they did other things with it as well. But the money's gone. That's the point. And so when the debt matures, companies will have to renew the debt. And that will be at higher interest rates. So that's just going to be a really negative drag on the economy, as well as consumers, of course. But it's going to be a drag on the economy. So I think we're seeing signs, and consumers, although they're spending, as I say, you know, short-term increases in money, whether it's a stimulus check or whether it's money they took out of a house from refinancing or whatever, you don't have very, very solid savings rates. You don't have very dramatic wage increases at the moment, particularly if you offset it by the decline in, you know, the employment rate. So you don't have, across the board, you don't have a huge increase in wages. So if you start seeing prices, if you continue to see prices move up, you may see the same dollar volume of spending, but most of that is simply because of prices moving up. And eventually people will have to decide, you know what, maybe we can't afford, you know, the driving holiday, or we can't afford the, you know, trip to the Bahamas. Instead, we'll take a driving holiday, or we already have the Disney and the Netflix and the Apple and the Roku or whatever it's called, you know, and the YouTube, and we've got all these, and HBO. My gosh, do we really need 8 streaming service subscriptions? And people would just start cutting back on things. And that, of course, is all incremental, and all pushes the economy, or all leads towards the economy slowing. But to your point, if I may, and I'm sorry I'm talking a lot, but to your point about doom and gloom and what about the stock market, yes, I mean, if the stock market can continue doing well with the Fed up until last month was still increasing its balance sheet. It was still providing liquidity. So the stock market can continue to do well in that kind of environment. Where the stock market will not do well, frankly, if history is a guide, is in stagflation. And in a stagflationary period, again, if history is a guide, gold tends to do very well, but stocks tend to lag. And bonds, of course, are the worst of all in a stagflationary period. So stocks can do very well with inflation, so long as you continue to have growth with that inflation. And in fact, in an inflationary period accompanied by growth, stocks are one of the best places to put your money. So the big question is, are we going to get continued economic growth, or are we going to see a slowdown in growth and, you know, perhaps a recession by the end of this year, or next year? And, you know, today, was it today or yesterday? All these days blend together after a while, don't they? The GDP number in the U.S., yes, everyone's talking about what the White House called technical factors. Well, there's no question that there were certain factors that made the GDP number negative, and more negative than it should have been. But if you take out some of those factors, you still have a very, very weak first quarter, which shows to me that inflation, particularly on things like energy and gas, is just beginning to have an effect.
Well, Adrian, I think that it doesn't necessarily need to be doom and gloom. It actually is just math. Like, when we look at it, if the consumer is starting to get tapped out, they've been spending, but they've also, if we look at some of the reports coming out, they're tapping their savings. They're starting to live on credit cards. And a lot of the spending, like you said, has been because of higher prices that some of these companies have done well. If higher prices persist because of inflation, the consumer will not be able to keep spending like they have been. And to your point, they may not take that vacation. They may not do that extra purchase. They may cancel some of their services. And then we're going to start seeing earnings reports from companies that are less than stellar. And your point about the GDP growth and stagflation is right on. We are seeing slowing growth paired with inflation, paired with high energy prices. And there's a point where some companies, if they get hit in the wallet and people can't buy anymore, the companies may start reducing some of their employees or cutting back hours. And then we'll have all of the ingredients for stagflation, which could lead to recession. So it doesn't need to necessarily be doom and gloom as much as it is forecasting and mathematics. So the one wild card has been the high dollar. And so people feel good that the dollar's high, but that's only in relation to other equally crashing fiat currencies. People's purchasing power is being eroded by that inflation. And I don't see that changing anytime soon. So couldn't things be setting up for a stagflationary event just due to the mathematics on it?
Yeah, no, I think everything you said is correct. I mean, I do think a couple of points, if I may, though. I tend to think in terms of labor layoffs, we're quite a ways from that. You know, what we've just been through in the last couple of years and the difficulty companies have had, a lot of companies have had hiring people, particularly, well, not only at the lower end, the lower wage level, but really across the board. I think companies are going to be slow to lay people off, personally. But eventually you reach a point where if your revenue goes down, you reach a point where you have to. But we're not there yet by any means. And you weren't suggesting we were. But on the point about the dollar, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's interesting, but we think, and you said it, that the Fed is so far behind the curve this time. But they're certainly behind a lot of smaller countries, you know, central banks, Estonia and, you know, Chile and other countries that have, Brazil, that have raised their rates. But in terms of the major central banks of the world, other than Canada, you look at the Britain, if Britain is still major, you look at Britain, you look at the ECB, of course, you look at Japan, you look at China, and they're all going in the opposite direction to the Fed. You know, ECB is saying, oh, yes, inflation, what a horrible number we just had from Germany. But that's it. That's the peak. You know, inflation is coming down now. So we can afford to be very slow in raising rates. You've got China that's actually stimulating the economy. On the one hand, they're locking down major cities. And on the other hand, they're starting to stimulate not the consumer, but they're stimulating infrastructure. And then, of course, you've got Japan that's doing whatever Japan has done for the last 40 years that clearly hasn't worked. But, you know, well, if it's not working, let's just try twice as much. And so the point I'm making, the serious point I'm making, is that every other major central bank in the world is to some degree or another moving in the opposite direction of the Fed, which means that the dollar's just going to, you know, money's going to continue to come to the dollar. Dollar's going to continue to be strong. And that's going to, that's one of the reasons, you know, one of the reasons that gold has been a little bit weak in the last, couple of, you know, the last month or two, after the spike we had when Russia invaded Ukraine. But, you know, dollar strength is, and that's obviously dollar strength leads to a greater trade deficit, and so on. So all these factors, all these ramifications come from the Federal Reserve policy, which even though it's not in any way hawkish, is less dovish than the rest of the world, without any doubt.
It is, and it's still a comparative game, right? We all circle back around to that aspect, that whether you consider it dovish or hawkish, what the Fed is doing, you compare it to other central banks, and what's about to come, it seems like, is going to be a fairly aggressive rate hike for what we're seeing around the world. So we'll see how the markets react, and we'll see when we do go into this recession or stagflation. Some of the recent data is pointing more towards that. We'll see if the Fed reacts early or late, or if we even get there, because, again, who knows if inflation's even going to stay as high as it has just in the last few readings. Well, maintained as high as it has really over the last year now. Adrian, thank you for your time. As always, good chatting with you. We'll chat again with you next month, and who knows what narrative we'll be talking about then, but it will, again, have some slant towards what central banks are doing. We'll see if there's still discrepancy around the world. Adrian, thank you again for your time. We'll chat again next month. Have a great rest of your weekend.
And you, thank you, and thank you for having me.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.